So we have Ms. Armini?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Your voice is a little bit soft, so I don't know if you are far away from the microphone or you need to speak up.
I will speak up. Can you hear me now?
Very
yeah,
good.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Lither?
It's actually Lither.
Lither, okay. All right, you're coming through very clearly. All right, and I'm the Chief Judge. I'm in Carson City. I'm joined today by Judge Jerry Tao and Judge Bonnie Bola, both of whom are in the Las Vegas courtroom. We've been doing these arguments since last May by audiovisual equipment. It's worked pretty well. But as you know, we have a backup system in case anybody falls off or the screen freezes or whatever. So we'll just pause if something like that happens, see if we can get the person back on. In one case, we were not able to, and we had to switch to the telephone. So hopefully that won't happen.
Yeah, let us know if you guys have any audio problems. You know, raise your hand or, you know, give us some kind of, you know, visual indication. But we're just doing the best we can under the circumstances.
Okay. We're still following the mask mandates in the courtrooms. You can see Judge Tao and Judge Bola are seated not close, but much closer than I am because I don't have another judge here in Carson City. So they, of course, will keep their mask on at all times. Fortunately, counsel doesn't have to follow that since you are in your offices, I presume.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I'm actually in my house, but I have kicked my kids out, so there shouldn't be any distractions.
And you know, at home's our offices nowadays anyway, right?
Right. All right. Judge Bola, would you like to make any opening or welcoming comments?
Well, good afternoon. Please, as Judge Tao indicated, let us know if you cannot understand us, or we will do our best not to interrupt you. But again, please let us know if we can be of assistance and asking, you know, so you can hear us when we ask our questions.
All right. Thank you, Judge Bola. So I will officially call the case. It's case number 81070. And I'm not sure the pronunciation of the name. Chowdhury versus State.
Chowdhury.
Pardon?
I believe it's Chowdhury.
SH sound?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Chowdhury versus State Department of Health and Human Services. And specifically, we're dealing with Nevada Medicaid in this case. We have Ms. Armini and Mr. Lither for the parties. Ms. Armini, do you want to reserve any time for a rebuttal argument?
Yes, Your Honor. May I please reserve 3 minutes?
Okay, 3 minutes. All right, and hopefully you can see the light. I'm looking at four screens, and one of them is the timer. Can you see that too?
I can.
All right. Mr. Lither, same thing?
Yes, I can see it as well.
Okay. All right. Ms. Armini, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Paola Armini from the law firm of Clark Hill, and I represent Dr. Chowdhury and Chowdhury Pediatrics. We are asking today that you set aside the below decision as it was not based on substantial evidence and thus resulted in an abuse of discretion. There are four reasons why the below decision needs to be set aside. The first reason, Nevada Medicaid canceled the contract of Dr. Chowdhury based on the check of a box. The state utilizes the check of the box to essentially end the livelihood of a doctor who has spent decades caring for the most vulnerable population, our children. Children who would only receive medical care through Medicaid. There was no failure to disclose here. Nevada Medicaid had the judgments of the conviction, both judgments of conviction, but namely the judgment of conviction for the gross misdemeanor, in their file for a minimum of 4 years prior to when the letters of termination were sent to Dr. Chowdhury and Chowdhury Pediatrics. They had constructive possession. It is undisputed that the judgments of conviction were attached and not only in 2014, 2015, and 2017. The state argues essentially that they couldn't be bothered to look at the attachments. But however, in the fair hearing, it was conceded that the attachments are in fact part of the application, that the declaration that is signed by the doctor references both the application and the attachments, and one is to expect that all the documents are going to be reviewed. We know that in 2014, they actually did look at the attachments because they revisited the issue of whether the Medicaid fraud conviction should ultimately terminate Chaudhry Pediatrics' contract. At that point, they ultimately agreed to once again approve the contract. So at most, what we have here is an inconsistency, but not a failure to disclose. And frankly, a simple inquiry, a phone call, something to a doctor that has been well-established, has had no prior issues, to call and reference and just simply ask, why is this inconsistent?
So, Ms. Armini, I apologize for interrupting so early, but I want to kind of drill down on what you're saying. So you have an answer to the checkbox, which gives it one answer. Then you have supporting documents, which are inconsistent with that answer. Is your argument then that under that circumstance, is it that there's no misrepresentation or is that there's no reliance on any misrepresentation that may have been made?
Your Honor, I think that there's an argument that there's no misrepresentation, that it becomes ultimately some sort of inconsistency. Because for it to be a full misrepresentation, that would make sense if the box was checked no and there was no judgment of conviction attached. I think that's clear cut. The answer is no, and certainly Nevada Medicaid on that answer would probably have the right to terminate based on a failure to disclose here or omit information. But here we have, and I think there's some reasoning, and we explained that in our briefs as to why Dr. Chaudhry ultimately did check, that box was checked no. But if we're really looking at what the issue is, whether there's been a failure to disclose here, I think we have to look at the totality of the circumstances and look at not only the application but the attachments, because as part of the re-enrollment process, you should be looking at both per Nevada Medicaid's own testimony during the fair hearing. So Nevada Medicaid chose, because of this inconsistency, to choose basically their decision to choose a check of a box over the low-income Nevadans who have received quality care from Dr. Chaudhry for over two decades. Our second reason to set aside the lower administrative hearings decision is because of the sanction. The sanction on Dr. Chaudhry, which was a Tier 3 at the time, 12-month suspension, there was no substantial – the reason that Nevada Medicaid terminated or provided this sanction was based on the fact that they said that Dr. Chaudhry's gross misdemeanor conviction was incompatible with the mission statement. However, at no point during the fair hearing was any evidence, not only substantial evidence, but any evidence provided that stated that the mission statement was that the conviction itself was inconsistent with the mission statement. We also know that there's no dispute that the gross misdemeanor conviction had nothing to do with patient care, billing, Medicaid, anything like that, and so there was just simply no proof whatsoever, no evidence whatsoever, that it was inconsistent with a mission statement. And if that is true, if the conviction is not incompatible with a mission statement, then a Tier 3 sanction is not appropriate, and there's no basis for that Tier 3 sanction.
Ms. Armini, let me just interrupt you briefly. This was a Tier 3 sanction with a one-year suspension. Has Dr. Chaudhry been reinstated individually?
Your Honor, so the state and I agreed to a stay of the termination through the district court ruling. After that, we requested from this court that the stay continue through this court's decision. So to answer your question, she hasn't been reinstated because there's been a stay and she's been continued to practice medicine.
So she would have to... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. She would have to serve her one-year suspension.
Yes, Your Honor. She still has to serve her one-year suspension.
Was the information submitted to the National Practitioners Data Bank, the settlement agreement that was entered into between Dr. Chaudhry and the Board of Medical Examiners, do you know?
Your Honor, I'm not 100% sure. I want to say yes, but I don't know if I can tell you with 100% confidence. I believe it was.
Thank you.
So let me ask you this. NRS 422, let me get a section, 422.306 says that we have to give some deference to factual findings made in any administrative proceeding. So in this case, I mean, you can certainly make an argument that factually this might have been the wrong decision to make, but that's not our decision to make de novo. The board made its decision, so the question is, how much deference is that decision entitled to from us?
Well, and I think, Your Honor, I apologize, I didn't hear you. Did you say NRS 422.306? Was that the statute you were referring to?
Yes. I may have that wrong. I'm just going off of my notes, and honestly, I can't even read my handwriting right now, but I think that's the number. It might be one or two statutes off of that, but hopefully you know what I'm talking about.
I do, and you are right. It is that statute. And I agree there has to be some deference, but our position is that they're looking at the whole record here. Was it clearly erroneous looking at the whole record, or was it arbitrary or capricious based on there not being substantial evidence? And our position is there was not substantial evidence to have these findings in the four categories that we're speaking of, the four reasons I said that the decision should be set aside. For instance, with what I just finished off talking about was the sanction for Dr. Chowdhury, not only was there there was not any evidence, so there was no basis, there was an abuse of discretion there when they found that the Tier 3 sanction was appropriate because there was no evidence presented that her conviction, her gross misdemeanor conviction, was incompatible with the mission statement.
So this is an issue, and I don't want to spin this argument into some place where it doesn't belong, but if you guys follow the legal books, this is an issue that's actually currently, it's been debated for the last couple of years ever since Neil Gorsuch's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. At the federal level, it's called Chevron deference. How much deference do courts have to give to administrative tribunals? And I know that's it's an area that's very much in flux, but at a policy level, the reason we have this deference is, look, these are board decisions. These are decisions made by people with a lot more expertise in what's good for the public and healthcare than we are. I have no medical training whatsoever. I've learned a lot through my years as a lawyer, but I'm not going to sit here and say I know anything about who should be licensed and who shouldn't. And that's why that deference exists. And then the other reason that deference exists is, if every decision by every one of these boards were fully appealable to the courts, there are thousands of these decisions, and now you're asking courts to second guess people with more expertise. That's the argument for Chevron deference. Of course, the counter argument against Chevron deference is, we can read statutes. That's our job. And some of these board members aren't even lawyers. I think the way most boards in Nevada are set up is every board has at least one non-lawyer member. What's that person doing interpreting statutes? So this is kind of part of a bigger debate here. It's just a debate that's happening in the law right now, and I'm not sure that there's a clear answer to it. There are very clearly two legitimate sides here, but that kind of feels like that's the kind of issue that this case is tapping into. We may disagree with this decision or agree with it. I think reasonable minds good, but there are doctors over there, and I'm not one. So what am I supposed to do about that?
Well, Your Honor, I think you're right. There is some deference, but that's what NRS 422.306 allows, is if the appellant or Dr. Chowdhury Pediatrics in this situation has been prejudiced by the administrative finding, which we believe he has and the company has because of the clearly erroneous decision of the fair hearing master, as well as on some of the topics, and then I think ultimately as well on some of the other issues, that there was not, it was an abuse of discretion because there's no substantial evidence. And so I think for those factors, even though you can give deference, if the court finds that there's a clearly erroneous decision not based on substantial evidence and there's been an abuse of discretion, this court can step in and set aside that decision.
Okay. Ms. Armini, you indicated you have four reasons or arguments, and
I do.
I've only heard two. Can you quickly go through the other two?
Yes, Your Honor. The third reason is Nevada Medicaid terminated the contract of Chowdhury Pediatrics in contradiction to the plain language of the Medicaid regulations. The state during the fair hearing essentially stated that there was an error in drafting and it could have been more clear as to what was meant. But there's no need to interpret. The plain language of the Medicaid Services Manual regulations is consistent with the Code of Federal Regulations, specifically CFR 455.416, which talks about termination of enrollment, where it specifically says any provider where any person with a 5% or greater, and I'm paraphrasing, ownership interest has been convicted of the Medicaid fraud. So this is not only consistent with their manual is not only consistent with the Code of Federal Regulations, it's also consistent with their prior decision that they made in 2014, where they revisited the issue of the Medicaid fraud conviction and made a decision to re-enroll Choudhury Pediatrics again. And when I say revisit, the reason I'm saying that is because before that, Nevada Medicaid was integrally involved in the... May I continue and that answer?
No, keep going. It's your choice, but you're losing your time. You do need to identify the fourth one so you can refer back to that on rebuttal.
All right. And the fourth one is essentially the sanction on the company itself. When you look at 106.3 of the Medicaid Services Manual, that specifically says sanctions apply to entities when individuals meet the criteria who have the 5% ownership interest and are convicted of the felony offense. So by their very manual, they can't sanction Choudhury Pediatrics to a tier one sanction. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Armeni. Mr. Leiter, then, on behalf of all the respondents, go ahead.
Thank you. May it please the court, Senior Deputy Attorney General Gabriel Leiter, representing Nevada's Department of Health and Human Services, the Division of Healthcare Financing and Policy, which is also known as Nevada Medicaid. Procedurally, this case started when Nevada Medicaid terminated two providers who chose to be dishonest in their dealings with Nevada Medicaid. Consequently, those providers requested a hearing pursuant to NRS 422.306 and received that hearing in front of Hearing Officer Georgianne Bradley. During that hearing, hundreds of pages of exhibits were submitted to the judge. There was extensive briefing done, multiple witnesses were called, and ultimately, Hearing Officer Bradley issued a decision that affirmed Nevada Medicaid's choice to terminate these providers. From there, the appellants appealed to the First Judicial District Court, which again upheld Nevada Medicaid's decision, and from there, we're now here before this court. And the issue before this court is whether there is substantial evidence to support the hearing officer's decision. The Hilton decision in Nevada and others have made it clear that substantial evidence is evidence that a reasonable mind might accept as adequate to support a decision, and that appellate courts do not reverse a decision, even if it is against the preponderance of the evidence, if there is substantial evidence to support it. And in this case, there's substantial evidence to support the terminations of both Choudhury Pediatrics and Dr. Choudhury. I'm sorry, I'll try to remember to say it Choudhury. I've been saying it Choudhury for a couple of years here. Choudhury. Okay, so first, with respect to Choudhury Pediatrics, the business. This business was a Medicaid provider in 2010 when it was convicted of a felony. The felony for which it was convicted was, in fact, Medicaid fraud. And it wasn't an insignificant amount of fraud. There was testimony from their own lawyer that they ended up paying in restitution $100,000 pursuant to that conviction. So they had that conviction for Medicaid fraud, and every couple of years, providers have to re-enroll with Nevada Medicaid. The first time they had to re-enroll with Nevada Medicaid was 2014. In that application, they re-enrolled, and they did disclose that they had that conviction. Choudhury Pediatrics, the business, checked the box, yes, that they had the conviction, and said, see attachments, and there were attachments related to that conviction. Unfortunately, an administrative assistant with Nevada Medicaid who was contacted by the fiscal agent indicated that it was okay to enroll Choudhury Pediatrics. The appellant's argument is that because Nevada Medicaid made that mistake, it cannot move to correct that mistake once it discovers it. It is our position that not only can we correct that mistake when we discover it, but we have an obligation to safeguard both recipients as well as Nevada Medicaid's fiscal interest by taking action to correct the mistake once we discover it. Under appellant's view, any provider, and we have to remember, we have 37,000 providers with Nevada Medicaid, But under appellant's view, whenever Nevada Medicaid, if we made any mistakes and enrolled any provider who's been erroneously enrolled, any provider who's got any conviction, we would have to keep them as providers no matter what that conviction was. We could have, for example, providers convicted of assault or opioid distribution and end up still having to do business with those providers.
Mr. Leithert?
Yes.
You indicated that the business, Chaudhry, provided the documents and correctly checked the box, and that the person from Nevada Medicaid that reviewed it, I didn't hear you say that the person overlooked it, but the person decided to go ahead and approve it. Did I hear that wrong from you?
What happened was there's a fiscal agent who we use who checked with Nevada Medicaid, and the person they checked with was an administrative assistant named Vanessa Pickles, and she indicated to the fiscal agent that it was okay to enroll Chaudhry Pediatrics. She probably did not have authority to do that. She wasn't the chief of that unit to make that decision, but she did make that representation to the fiscal agent, and based on that administrative assistant's representation, the fiscal agent enrolled Chaudhry Pediatrics.
All right. So
despite
then,
the conviction for Medicaid fraud.
Thank you for clarifying that. So then the next thing you said was that when an error is discovered, it can be corrected. So the error that we're talking about was committed by Nevada Medicaid, if it was an error, not by Chaudhry on this particular very specific point.
Yes, on this very specific point. It was an error by Nevada Medicaid and its fiscal agent to enroll, to allow a provider who's been convicted of Medicaid fraud to enroll with Nevada Medicaid.
Right. Now, let me ask you the other question that just to button this down all the way. I thought that the hearing officer said that there was some discretion under the rules to allow for people that have committed a crime like this to still be enrolled using the agency's discretion. It was not 100% black and white. The person did not have to be excluded. Discretion could be exercised. Enrollment could happen. Is that accurate?
I believe that's basically accurate. I think that under the CFR, the federal regulation, which really sets all of this forth, there is an exception if Nevada Medicaid determined that good cause existed not to disenroll that provider, not to terminate that provider.
So isn't it possible then in 2014 that it was a discretionary call and not simply a mistake, that someone made a decision, knew the facts, made a decision, and then years later that decision essentially was overruled?
No, I don't think there was any evidence that it was just simply, that they had considered it and said, yes, we're going to go forward with this. It was just an error by an administrative assistant who really did not have authority to do that.
I'm sorry. Do you have another question?
Again, define what you mean by error. You said because there were not findings made of good cause by the administrative assistant that therefore they couldn't have approved this. You have to specifically make these findings to justify it when there's this situation?
Yes, the CFR talks specifically about making those findings, putting those findings down, I believe, in writing, and having those findings available. In this case, there was testimony, or at least there was findings, I believe, in the hearing officer's decision. There were no findings found to support an exception to allow this business, to continue to do business with Nevada Medicaid despite its conviction for Medicaid fraud.
All right, go ahead, Judge Tao.
So I just want to follow up on where Judge Gibbons is going with this, because I mean, that raises an interesting issue. So you have, I understand you're saying that that's functionally, internally what happened. But from the doctor's point of view, she sends this application in. There is what appears to be an initial approval. Now, that initial approval may actually be illegal because it doesn't have the findings, right? But from the doctor's point of view, it looks like it could be construed as initial approval. And then years later, it's then revoked. If that's even a plausible way that the original approval was an actual exercise of good cause, but borderline illegal because he didn't make the findings, and had that been appealed, maybe we'd be saying, well, you should have made good cause findings and remanded. But if that can even be plausibly understood to be what happened, that's a whole different way of looking at this case, is it not?
I believe that is a different way of looking at this case. I don't think that that's what happened. I think more importantly, the hearing officer who listened to all of the evidence, all of the testimony, multiple witnesses, she did not agree with that determination. She upheld, and I believe there's substantial evidence to support that decision, to uphold the termination of Chowdhury Pediatrics. Under that view, again, if Nevada Medicaid enrolled erroneously a provider who's been convicted of opioid distribution, we'd have to have that relationship with that provider. Here, we'd have to maintain a relationship with a provider who's actually been convicted of fraud against the very agency, Nevada Medicaid. And as far as the CFR, one other thing, when the CFR talks about good cause is when, in our view, when there's a lack of really needed medical providers, so certain specialties that we need, a pediatric pulmonologist or something of that nature, where we have to do business with them despite the fact that they've done something horrendous to Nevada Medicaid. This is not the instance here. There was no finding that good cause existed to make that determination. And I believe there was testimony from Kathy Viro from Nevada Medicaid about that lack of good cause.
Mr. Leiter, doesn't fraud imply some sort of intent, that there was an intention to deceive the agency? And how do you reconcile that with the fact that you all have the documentation to support the conviction, and your understanding at least would have been that something did in fact occur of a criminal nature before you did approve it, regardless of the circumstances?
I think fraud does show an intent to deceive, and thus their conviction for Medicaid fraud. That's what's so troubling, is that they were convicted of a crime that showed their intent to deceive our client, Nevada Medicaid. So that's,
and you're basing that, sir, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you're basing that on a checked box on an application.
No. As Your Honor stated, fraud, it shows an intent to deceive, which was the felony conviction for Chowdhury Pediatrics. It was for Medicaid fraud.
I'm sorry, go ahead, sir.
No, go ahead. If you've got a question,
Leiter, she's talking about the intent to deceive Nevada Medicaid, not with this reapplication process, not the original crime.
Yeah, we're not saying for Chowdhury Pediatrics that the business intended to deceive with respect to the reapplication process. They had the crime, Medicaid fraud, that we don't think should force us to continue to do business with them. But there is that intent to deceive, which is important with respect to Dr. Chowdhury. So I'd like to speak briefly with respect to her, as I have just a few minutes left. But so for Dr. Chowdhury, the issue is that her crime was a different crime. It was not a felony. It was actually a crime pursuant to NRS 202.595, gross misdemeanor, performance of act or neglect of duty, and willful to wanton disregard of safety of person or property. So she had that gross misdemeanor conviction. And the first re-enrollment application following that conviction was in 2012. And in that box, in that application, Nevada Medicaid clearly asks, have you ever been convicted of any misdemeanors, gross misdemeanors, felonies, any crimes? And she absolutely checked the box, no. And then she signed it, and she signed it under penalty of perjury that everything was true and accurate and complete to the best of her knowledge. And there's a factual dispute whether there were documents related to that conviction submitted in 2012. But we agree that the next time that she submitted it in 2015, where again she checked the box no, which again to Nevada Medicaid, this is somewhat distressing, as we have a provider who's got a conviction for Medicaid fraud, and it appears they're not learning. They're still being dishonest. They're not checking that, yes, they've got any crime. It's a very clear question. And then they say, yes, they say in that one, they did attach attachments. Which is true. They did attach attachments to that 2015 application. But in our view, you should not be able to, on any enrollment application or, frankly, on any dealings with any governmental matter, be able to put a false response on an application that's clearly a lie and then get around that by somehow attaching somewhere in documents to that agency. I could not, to the IRS, report that I have, yes.
I'm sorry, did you say she checked the no box in 2015?
Yes, in 2012 and in 2015, for Dr. Chowdhury, she checked the box no, despite the very clear ask by Nevada Medicaid if she had any convictions. And she checked the box no. She, at the hearing, her office manager blamed the lawyer, although the lawyer had some disputes that he said, no, if asked, I would always tell them be truthful. But no, she clearly checked the box no, and she signed it. Her office manager may have been the one to actually fill out the form.
That goes back to Judge Bola's question then. Although technically the box was checked wrong, she provided the document, so it doesn't look like the intent was to deceive Nevada Medicaid as to the renewal in this situation. Could be wrong, but on the surface, it looks more like a technical violation than a specific purpose to deceive.
Well, we would disagree with that for a couple of reasons. First, I don't think that you can say that as far as whether there was intent or not, that's the issue that was ultimately determined by hearing officer Bradley, who listened to it for hours and hours, and we think that she should have deference on this issue. But secondly, in this case, providers should not be allowed to check no to a very clear question, and then in some place with a bunch of documents, attached documents that has the needle in the haystack that shows whatever it is, and then get around the fact that they responded no in the initial application. I could not fill out my taxes and report that I have zero income and then submit my W-2s, which show my actual income, and see what, you know, see what the IRS does. I don't think that's the way that we want to allow providers or businesses in the state of Nevada to act.
Mr. Leiter, you certainly make a good point there. So then let's take it to the next level. Was it about 3 years later that the decision was made to revoke the or not renew anymore on the Nevada Medicaid?
Yes, in 2017, when Ms. Viro got involved and she discovered the errors and she acted to correct it.
I'll give you a little extra time to finish that, but just on this point, is there any time limit, do you think, where someone from Nevada Medicaid, in this case an experienced person, a supervisor, checked it and found the mistake and decided to take action? Let's say it wasn't in 2018. Let's say it was in 2028. I mean, is there any time limit at all? And assuming there have been no problems with this medical practice in the meantime?
I think that ultimately that may play into whether deference should be given, whether Nevada Medicaid should use its discretion to not take a specific action against one of the providers. In this particular case, I think that the hearing officer was the one who could ultimately conclude that Nevada Medicaid did not abuse its discretion by not giving deference to Chowdhury Pediatrics. I do agree with Your Honor that probably at some point it would be necessary to exercise this discretion based on some length of time, if it's 20 years down the road or something of that nature. I don't think that the specific facts in this case merit that.
All right. You have one quick point you wanted to make. Go ahead.
I did have one last quick point. Mm-hmm. As far as the sanction on Dr. Chowdhury, that it was mentioned that was incompatible with the mission of Nevada Medicaid, it's certainly our position that it still is that conviction, the gross misdemeanor, is incompatible with our mission. There was also additional testimony from Ms. Viro that supported that 12-month sanction period based on the failure to disclose. But even if the sanction for Dr. Chowdhury herself was overturned, that would only be the sanction and not the ultimate decision to terminate her. That would only be the 12-month sanction period. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Leiter. All right, Ms. Armini, you have just over 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, Mr. Leiter said about a needle in a haystack. We are talking about 50 pages specific to Dr. Chowdhury and Chowdhury Pediatrics to review. And again, this is part of the application and part of the re-enrollment process to look at those pages. The hearing master did make her decision, but in the conclusions of law, she doesn't even address the attachments. She simply makes her decision based on the check of the box. And so I would submit to the court that that was an abuse of discretion because she failed to even consider or include why the attachments were not part of the failure to disclose. Mr. Leiter's incorrect. It's never been our position that the initial re-enrollment of Chowdhury Pediatrics was a mistake. Our position was that was the correct decision back in 2014, and their decision years later was the incorrect mistake. We talk about the enrollment, the re-enrollment process of Chowdhury Pediatrics, but as the court is likely aware, Nevada Medicaid was an integral part of the process of the criminal prosecution. They were the complaining witness back in 2010 represented by the AG's office, similar to Mr. Leithers, represents the AG's office here today. So not only were they made aware of it when it was attached as part of the re-enrollment package, but they were well aware of it in 2010 as the complaining witness. They agreed with the conviction when Dr. Chowdhury was removed from the criminal action, and the conviction was just for the company. It went through the Medicaid, Nevada Medical Board of Examiners administrative process, and everybody agreed at that point as well. So this is, the Medicaid fraud is something that the Nevada Medicaid was aware of for many, many years, even before they were submitted, because they were an integral part of the process. Your Honor, there was nothing dishonest here, at most a clerical mistake. I think Mr. Leithers has conceded that Chowdhury Pediatrics hasn't done anything dishonest in submitting their paperwork to Nevada Medicaid. So really the only question is, was the check of the box dishonest? And I would submit to the court, when you attach a judgment of conviction that has all the information that Nevada Medicaid application requested, they were not dishonest. We ask you to set aside the Fair Hearing Master's decision. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Armeni. Excellent work. Great job, Mr. Leithers. This was very helpful to the court to hear the presentation from both parties. This matter will be taken under submission for a written decision in the near future. And we've never had a case quite like this, so that's why we set it for oral argument. We get a lot of administrative cases, but we're finding out that the statutes are complex. The rules, in this case, the Medicaid rules are. We have other cases where administrative decisions with no cases interpreting these statutes, so it's a challenge. We do have some federal law we can look at here too, but nonetheless, it's still pretty difficult. So it's very illuminating to have the argument of counsel. All right, Judge Tao or Judge Bola, do you have any concluding comments?
Just to thank you both for the argument, and again, thank you for accommodating us and doing the argument online. I know this is never ideal, but it's the world we live in. It's just so much more natural when we're all in person. We can ask you questions, and there's a flow there and all that kind of stuff, but this is the best we can do. But I do want to thank you for the argument. This is one of those cases where, obviously we all asked you a lot of questions, but honestly, if we had another half hour on this, I have more questions, but then, I don't want to just take up all your time by asking questions, but this is one of those cases that has a lot of interesting nuances to it, and we really appreciate your time and your effort, and we're going to do the best we can with it.
Thank you both very much. I really enjoyed both arguments, and we really appreciate you bearing with us with our masks. I know it's hard sometimes to be able to see that we're ready to interrupt with a question, and you were both wonderful about allowing us to address you and obviously ask the questions we needed to. And I certainly join with Judge Tao. I'm sure we would have a lot more questions to ask if we had more time, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. My biggest fear going into this was that you guys would want to ask a question. I'd be looking down and not realize it and just, not allow you guys. So this was the most significant oral argument I think I've done over a Zoom-like method. And I have to say, it worked a lot better than I thought it would. It worked fairly well. Thank you to your IT people also. They were great in helping set this up.
Well, and thank you for you guys for working with them. I know that, you guys have to do like a little rehearsal beforehand, which is something you wouldn't have to do in person, but it helps us eliminate any glitches. But I know it's more time and effort and probably a little bit distracting for you guys as you get ready for an argument, but it's the world we live in, as I said.
It is. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our IT people are feeling much better right now. Everything went well. All right, we're in recess.